Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Welcome to Money and Me. I'm Michelle Martin. Coming up, we're going to take a look at a stock. If you invested in it in 2000, you invested, say, $5,000 in 2000, your $5,000 would be worth $4.7 million today. What is that stock? Well, stay tuned. First up, time to welcome Swapnil Mishra, adjunct lecturer at SMU and author of a fantastic book, Investing for the Clueless, the Reckless and the Overly Cautious, which is pretty much us all. How are you, Swapnil? Good morning.
Good morning. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I am doing great. So, Abnil, I'm not going to put you on the spot and ask you how much your portfolio is worth, but I will ask you to share some treasures, some lessons. What have you learned from managing your portfolio over, say, the past decade?
I like to break the past decade because I would say the first 5 years of that past decade were fraught with, you know, common mistakes that are made. And the last 5 years, I think I've done a slightly better job at, and so I'm able to see the distinction between when I was doing, you know, well and when I was not doing well in terms of managing the portfolio. So the decade is split in those two.
Interesting. Okay, so take us from the start. Are there some key lessons that you can walk us through?
So one is the importance of being calm versus the importance of having the skills. For a long time, this idea that you have to be really good at, or you should be skilled in terms of understanding the financial markets, being able to predict, being able to read complex reports, it's, all of that is not so relevant. It is more being able to stay calm, either in really good times or in really bad times. But the ability to stay calm, I think that trumps the need for skill.
Stay calm instead of try. It's a good idea to pick up skills along the way, but you don't need that advanced, sophisticated level of skill given the kind of platforms we have these days that make it very easy to get started. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
And skill doesn't guarantee you returns or stability or, you know, performance in your portfolio, but calmness definitely has that influence of preventing you from, let's say, in April 2020, there were a lot of people who just closed, sold everything because they said, oh, this the world is coming to an end.
Yes.
And that's where calmness is needed. Otherwise, you would not be holding on to your positions.
Actually, do you mean mindfulness, sort of staying aware of your situation, of where
Correct.
You are?
And
I suppose it's not letting you. You do?
Yeah. So you have to trick your mind into doing that. So that's the one thing which I really found useful, which is you start creating some rules around the way you're making decisions. And once you make those rules, you kind of start adhering to them and use them as a way to influence. Because, you know, when the emotions are surging, the market's going up and down, the headlines are really influencing your decision-making. You read a headline, you're like, oh my God, this is really bad or this is really good.
Mm-hmm.
And in both the cases, you have to be anchored to your framework that you have created, which is rules. And the rules help you make that decision.
Yeah, we throw out all the rules when we start to feel the adrenaline, sense the adrenaline and the fear from those headlines. So what are just some of those rules that can underpin how you make decisions about whether you buy or you sell?
So one rule, for example, which helps you, to stay invested and not rush into selling is to define what is your core portfolio. So core is something which is going to be there for the long run. It is not something that you're going to sell just because it has gone up. So if you take this example of the stock, which was 77 cents, it was $70 in April, 4 years back. So now, if we were back in April at 70, we could say, oh my God, it's already gone from 77 cents to 70. Should we cash out? And today it has gone to 790 from the 77 in 4 years. So the thing is, in the long period of time, and this is where, you know, slightly institutional thinking helps, but in the long period of time, there are some things which are going to be core part of your portfolio and some which are not. Knowing the difference between the two is very important because which is not core, you need to get out in time. And what is core, you should not stress so much about it's gone up, so what do I do? Because then you will be selling away things along the way and then looking back 5 years later saying, oh, I wish I had not sold that.
So what are the rules for core different from the not core? The core is never touch?
Core is low cost. So you have to think cost. When you're thinking core, you're thinking, what are the ETFs I can use? So S&P 500, if you're allocating and say, okay, I'm going to put, you know, 10% of my equity into S&P 500, then what is the cheapest way of accessing that instrument? It has to be diversified and it has to be low cost because you're keeping it for 10 years. Mm-hmm. Cost is very important in a 10-year view. So cost and diversification becomes important where in the core part because those are not bets. That's a core holding that you're, you know, it's like mm-hmm. it's college education, you know, fund. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you just keep it and you're holding it for 10 years. You're not, you know, waiting to sell the minute it's up 30%.
Got it. And the not core is get out in time. So you're looking at transaction fees?
You're looking at transaction fees. You're also looking at momentum and trends. Let's say ARK ETF was a momentum pick in 2020. Even if you didn't pick the bottom and you picked it up along the way when it was, let's say, $70 or $80, it went all the way up to $120. Now, that's when a decision has to be made that, hey, I entered into this thing as a tactical play. Should I sell it or should I keep it? The decision will be influenced by whether it is a core part or not, and then you sell it and then you're fine with it, right? It will go up, it will go down. But applying that, you know, the distinction between a tactical bet versus a core holding, that's important.
So we started by you sharing the overview that, you know, when I asked you, okay, over the last 10 years, what have you learned? You said the first 5 years, not so great. And then the next 5 years, much, much better. So April 2020 sits somewhere in the middle of those 5 years. What yes. prevented you from jumping on the sell-off of people deciding April 2020, okay, let's let a lot of it go?
First was market was down. So my existing holdings were already down, right? So like every other investor, mark to market, everything is down. You're seeing your portfolio down 30-40%. The thing is, at that point when everything is down, there is uncertainty and there is not enough information to help you make a very clear decision that I should sell. A clear decision to sell comes when there is, you know, certainty of that outcome. In this case, there is uncertainty as to what is going to happen. And in that environment, if you don't need the liquidity, so keep the margin call aside, right? So there are people who got margin called. That's a separate problem because you need to sell to, you know, pay up the margin to the bank. But if you don't need the money, then you have time on your side, which means you're letting information sink in, you're letting, you know, businesses. So one way to say is letting information sink in. The second is to say allow businesses to adapt to the new situation and go back to profitability over a period of time. And that's what you're doing, right? When you're giving companies time, you're essentially helping them recalibrate their business in the new environment. And they will be back to, you know, profitability over a period of time. And you have time on your hand. You don't need the money, right? So if, that's the thought process is react to uncertainty with calmness rather than panic and rushing to leave the market just because you don't like uncertainty.
Okay, so stay calm. Don't focus on the fancy skills. You can pick up skills along the way, but stay calm. That's a key behavioral approach, I think. Number two, let information sink in so that you get a clear signal as to when to sell. And then realize what your core portfolio is from that other, what I call the fun portfolio that you can get in and out and look at momentums and trends. Have I got that right? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll say one more, which is approximate versus precise.
Sorry, approximate versus?
Precise, right?
Precise.
So precision versus approximation.
Okay.
So, you know, let's say you're holding a stock which has gone up 50%. Now, you may not know the precise answer, but you're able to take a decision which is, okay, I can reduce this allocation by, let's say, 20%. What ends up happening is the desire for precision is we want to be very accurate that I am going to sell at the peak of the market. I don't want to miss out on the last 20% rally. But the idea here is not to get the peak. The idea is to approximately get it in that range where you've sold it at a level where you should have sold. So the approximation is very important versus precision. Otherwise, we keep waiting, even for buying stock, right? Entry. People keep waiting saying, I'll buy S&P 500 when it is at 4,800. Now you're stuck.
Yeah, you're stuck waiting for that to hit.
Yeah.
Okay. Have we covered your lessons over the last 10 years in full, or are there any more?
No, I think that's apart from the asset allocation, diversification
good.
Was our standard.
All right. Coming up, as promised, we'll talk about the stock that you could have bought back in 2000 for 77 cents. And then if you held it all the way from 2000 to now, you'd have 4.7 million. If you invested $5,000 in it. Even if you got in last year at $195, your $5,000 would be worth $19,000 as of earlier this year, Feb, I believe. All right, But first, let us move to Bill Gates. People love doing this. They love looking at Bill Gates' portfolio and then thinking, how can I do the same? But the thing is, if you were able to buy Microsoft before computers were a big thing, then sure, you could be a Bill Gates. But okay, let's just look at what the premise is. Bill Gates has 81% of his $46 billion portfolio in just four stocks. And they are Microsoft, Berkshire Hathaway, very unsexy sounding waste management, but if you think about it, very, very important. And Canadian National Railway. So, can you help us understand the value of Canadian National Railway today? Because you think there's so many different ways of transportation. Are railways still key and important?
Actually, identification of railway as a sector was done both by Bill Gates and his friend Warren Buffett. So if you see, it's somewhere around 2008, they both took big bets, right? So Warren Buffett, in 2008, I think he bought BSNF, the railway company in the US, along with Goldman Sachs, of course. And it was around the same time that Microsoft made that 7 million shares purchase of Canadian Railway. So they both kind of are aligned in this macroeconomic view, which is that the pulse of the economy, even if you know, across the sectors, is going to be reflected in this in railways and you know, railroad, in effect, things that help move things around in a country. So to them, the value of the stock was not so much pertaining to the stock, but to the 20,000 miles of railroad that they have, which helps move things around. And it's an intersection of retail, infrastructure, consumer spending,
supply chain.
So, you know, so it's kind of touching multiple industries at the very core. Mm-hmm. And that's I would say that's the macro hypothesis on this this kind of acquisition or investment.
So understand that institutional shareholders own 71% of this company. Does it make sense for a retail investor to look at CNR?
So if, in a sense, now, if somebody is listening to this show, let's say, now you know, right? So you can't unknow this stock. So there is a temptation to say, okay, let me go and look at it. But I think one has to be very clear that while it would fit Bill Gates' investment objective and investment thesis, it is not necessary that it has to fit into our investment thesis.
Oh,
so we may look at
point.
It and then see whether it fits in that thesis or not.
Mm-hmm.
For them, it fits perfectly.
It fits perfectly because this is about being able to have touch points in various different sectors that are coming together that are important for the economy.
One reason is also that you know, the $40-odd billion means very different to Bill Gates versus the 100,000 that means to me. So you have to keep the proportions in mind. Just because the numbers are big, Bill Gates is doing it for a very different reason. And for example, one reason for them is to exert control over the macroeconomic environment through companies like this.
Influence.
That could be one.
Mm-hmm.
Influence. Right? So you're on the board. He's the largest shareholder in that company. So you know, there's a much deeper reason that could be there. Second could be related to the fact that it's a Gates Foundation. They want a steady income because they are distributing that income through philanthropic efforts. So the income and the dividend guarantee is what they like about this stock. They don't really want to double their stock. They just want to keep getting a steady income, which could be the second thesis. So we don't know the position, the thesis, but I would say it's much more institutional rather than the way somebody would invest $10,000 in a stock.
Okay, got it. All right, let's look at our big stock that was 77 cents back in 2000. Before I get there, though, if you bought Apple at $169 today and you wanted it to 10x your money, you would need Apple to grow into something like a $15 trillion company, according to my friends at Motley Fool. which is larger than the GDP of China. So most people want to find a company that is much, much smaller than Apple, say 365 times smaller than Apple, so that they can get these massive gains. I want to look at case in point, NVIDIA, because it's one of these gorgeous charts to look at. Oh, if I put in 5,000 in NVIDIA in 2010, then as of February this year, I would have $944,000 from my 5,000 because, you know, I bought it at 385, and then as of February this year, I think it was about 760. So the question now becomes, have I missed the NVIDIA boat given what it is trading at today? And is this a stock worth looking at today?
I think the missed part is something which, it's like there's nothing that can be done about that, right? I mean,
does your book talk about morning missed opportunities? Oh, boy.
So that's any father and child conversation, which is, you know, the person 48 says, you know, you have no idea the possibilities that you have when you're 18. So
this is true.
Stock in 2000. So I think as an investor, though, again, I would bring it back to the thesis here. One, do we know today which is tomorrow's NVIDIA? Answer is no, not with precision for sure. We can take some guesses and identify 10 companies, but we wouldn't know with precision. We have missed the boat of NVIDIA. Yes, we have missed the boat. Now, what is the decision? So the only choices available to us are kind of building a hypothesis around NVIDIA's future from today and building the hypothesis around what is the best way for me to identify tomorrow's NVIDIA. These are only two things effectively in our control today. And both of the answers are available, right? If you want a basket of stocks, you can pick some ETF or you can do a little bit of research, identify 10 stocks and kind of build a portfolio and then wait for 10 years. Second is you take a call on NVIDIA and say, hey, I've missed it. But again, if you look at the last 4 years alone, at every point it would have looked really ridiculous that a $70 stock is now 180 last year.
77-cent stock, yeah. Would be 2020, $61, 2021, 132, 2022. I just love this chart, 303. And then, of course, 5th of April, 880. Wow.
Yeah. But I'm personally in the camp of believing in the stock and believing in the rock star that is running the place, Jensen Huang.
Right.
So I'm clearly in that camp that productivity increases through the application of AI and GenAI in businesses is still in very early stage. And so the triple-digit growth that these companies are pricing in today, I wouldn't say that it's unlikely that they will achieve that triple-digit growth. And that's my thesis, that these stocks have a role in a portfolio.
Everybody's looking at augmented virtual reality these days. Is that interesting for you when looking ahead at what could be the next NVIDIA?
It's difficult to identify. My biggest challenge in these things is stock picking. Is I personally find it difficult, and I don't know really if anyone really has cracked that of picking a winner out of that entire exercise. You're forced to go into an ETF, which helps you identify.
I mean, just augmented reality as a theme, is that something that interests you at all? Yeah.
Not so much. I feel it's more maybe with gaming it may have a role to play in the gaming industry, but otherwise I don't know if how far it will get applied.
Okay. Should I ask you when you bought NVIDIA? No, just kidding. Just kidding, Swapnil.
I bought more last year.
Oh my gosh, did you get in at 2000?
I bought more. So I would say, you know, we spoke about it last year. I think around November is when we spoke about adding more risk. So I did add.
I like the fact that you eat your own cooking, as my friend Willie likes to say. Yeah. Should be the case. Walk the talk. All right, Swapnil, thank you so much for joining us this morning, helping us understand, is it worth getting into NVIDIA today, taking a closer look at why Bill Gates maybe makes the decisions he does with his $46 billion portfolio particularly looking at Canadian National Railway and what Swapnil has learned from managing his portfolio over the last decade. If you'd like to hear more of his thoughts, you certainly can pick up his book, Investing for the Clueless, the Reckless and the Overly Cautious. Swapnil, you've thanks so that. Much. I got it right. I got you. All the adjectives.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Swapnil Mishra, they're my guests on Money and Me. I'm Michelle Martin. Thank you for your company.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio at the App Store and Google Play.